The following is a production of Snake Tree Media. This is Urgent Frequency, the sonic sit-rep for Urgent Fury, the hottest tactical gamer community on the World Wide Web. And now, here's your host, Commander Claymore Fury.
Hoo-yah, Frequency Freaks! I am Commander Claymore Fury, and this is Urgent Frequency for the week of Sunday, January 23rd, 2011. This week, we'll congratulate Urgent Fury's newest TAC Map champions as we invite 14 clans preparing to compete for the next TAC Map championship with the launch of Urgent Fury in-country for Call of Duty Black Ops. Then, an admiral stops by to give a major interview full of general questions as we welcome Raider, co-founder and clan leader of the clan that started it all, the Sea Snipers. Plus, Brady Games and Urgent Fury want to give you free stuff, but you'll have to earn it. Tougher than Jay Cutler and his ACL. This is Urgent Frequency.
Hi, this is Raider from the Sea Snipers. You're listening to Urgent Frequency only on UrgentFury.com.
There are so many things that we take for granted in our lives, but one thing that we should never take for granted are the brave men and women of our volunteered armed forces. Some of these brave warriors have suffered catastrophic injuries. Many are missing limbs or have been badly burned. The Wounded Warrior Project was created to help and support those who are returning home from combat with catastrophic injuries. To learn more, call 877-832-6997.
Hey everyone, I'm Veronica Belmont. This month in episode 32 of Core, presented by the PlayStation Network, we are looking back at the greatest moments in the world of PlayStation in 2010. From playing tons of awesome game releases to our intrepid adventures around the world, Core has pretty much seen and done it all this year. But a few moments stand out too much to not celebrate them again. Don't miss our look back at the best, the brightest, and weirdest moments of Core's 2010. We're back-to-back with Sackboy, as our Little Big Planet 2 coverage continues with a top-notch education from award-winning level builder, Sean Crowley.
Whatever you want to create, you can create.
If you're a fan of DC Comics, get ready for the biggest thing to happen to superheroes since Saturday morning cartoons. DC Universe Online is getting ready to take over the world, and we need your help defending it against the likes of Brainiac and his team of evildoers. If your tastes lean more towards the darkly comic, and just the plain dark, then you'll dive right into the new interactive comic that kicks off Mass Effect 2 on the PS3. We'll fill you in on the latest in Commander Shepard's space drama and the trials of the good ship Normandy. And Audrey Cleo is back with this month's hottest in Blu-ray releases. And finally, Core walked into a visit with our friends at Guerrilla Games and walked out with the Killzone 3 preview you won't find anywhere else. All this and more in episode 32 of Core, presented by the PlayStation Network.
Spoof that flashback. Flashback.
Oh yeah, the week's over. Your boss's complaints are silenced for another 3 nights. And now you want to blow that hard-earned money by throwing it at women who make more in one night than you do all month. That's right, you need to head up to Southern Strawville and walk through the gilded doors of 101 Damnations Gentlemen's Club. At 101 Damnations, you'll see 100 plus one oddities that'll titillate your sick fantasies to no end. Come see October, the Brazilian hot body with 3 breasts on her neck. The always lovely Bam Bam, she's ready to shed her eczema flakes of lust all over your face. This Saturday night, don't miss the erotic caramel tub wrestling match between Hot Ones and Lucky Bear. The rematch between these conjoined twisted sisters that everyone's been praying for. And finally, backed by popular demand, Miss Hogwild returns to 101 Damnations for 1 week only. And everyone knows there's no other one-legged midget that can charm that brass pole like she can. These and 96 other wonderfully wrong women are waiting to make your off-the-beaten-track fantasies a little more beatable. Call 1-555-HOT-SICK today for party reservations tomorrow. All nude, no pasties, and still offering a full top-shelf bar on the premises. Because at 101 Damnations, the more you drink, the better they look.
You know, my kidneys feel a lot better in this position. Maybe it's just that I'm not doing any calisthenics. You know, if I did some sit-ups in the morning or bent over like this, I'd probably feel 100% better. Moon River.
Urgent. Frequency. Frequency.
Two clans, four maps, one champion. That's what Urgent Fury Cold War, the first chapter in Urgent Fury's year-long end-of-days tournament event, came down to. In the end, our friends from the Great White North, the Canadian Killing Squad, slipped by LPK to become Urgent Fury's first TAC map champions of the new year. Congratulations and hoo-yah, CKS!
Five, seven, two, one.
The numbers. What do the numbers mean? Fury, what do the numbers mean?
To help celebrate the launch of Urgent Fury in Country, Chapter 2 in the epic year-long end-of-days tournament event storyline, Brady Games presents the Urgent Fury in Country Numbers Giveaway. First, go to urgentfury.com/numbers and decipher the coded message. Then, follow the link and follow the instructions. It's that simple. In a world where everything we know is wrong, Brady Games and Urgent Fury get it right. Get it right. It's the Urgent Fury and Country Numbers Giveaway, brought to you by Brady Games. Brady Games, take your game further.
One.
Gentlemen, good evening. My name is Nathan Sheehan. By now, I'm sure you're all wondering exactly what you're doing here. Well, you're here because you are the best there is at what you do. By now, a CNO detail is notifying your next of kin about your untimely, albeit heroic, demise here in the jungles of Vietnam. After today, you do not exist. You are just a memory. A ghost. Sometimes, if you want the truth, you have to make your own. We must fight our enemy from within. We have been given the great responsibility of being the protectors of democracy. We are the sentinels of liberty. Shining our light in the dark places of the world. In short, gentlemen, here in Vietnam, the Phoenix Project is the truth. And we have intel that suggests that the Soviet military might be supplying AK-47 assault weapons, RPGs, and possibly an unknown nerve agent to the VC. And while the Phoenix Project primarily targets civilian assets within the Viet Cong infrastructure, Red Army Captain Sergei Kolov's relationship with powerful VC gunrunners makes him the most dangerous man in the country. And with the apparent threat of biological warfare, he must be neutralized at any cost. Now, when you hear your name, you'll report to Mr. Hudson at SOG. The Uprising. Fatal Corruption. OGC. Shadow Ops. Violent Revolution. LPK, Wolf Clan, Clan Killa's Future Soldiers, the IL Sept, Circle 9, 503, Enemy Lines, Bulletproof Mafia, and Beast of Roar. I'd wish you luck, but I can assure you, gentlemen, none of this is about luck.
There are times when you have so much to say, just so little time.
Excuse me, what?
Good thing there's Twitter. We got you covered with the latest and the most talked about topics, 140 characters at a time. Follow us on Twitter.
Urgent frequency.
What could that be?
I believe it's the sound the Green Lantern made when Sinestro threw him into a vat of acid. Eepa!
Tonight's guest is without a doubt one of the most influential people in the world of tactical gaming. He, along with a handful of friends, took a handful of relatively simple ideas and went on to change the face of plan-based tactical gaming forever. The list of accomplishments and contributions is lengthy and even includes being somewhat directly and or indirectly involved with the creation of Urgent Fury, depending on how you look at it. He's a very talented graphic artist and designer who also happens to be the co-founder and leader of the Sea Snipers, arguably the most high-profile gaming clan in the entire world. He joins us via telephone from the Sea Snipers East Coast HQ. It is my pleasure to welcome to Urgent Frequency the Sea Snipers Admiral Raider. Welcome, sir, to Urgent Frequency.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You know, look, man, I've had Audrey Cleo on this program. I don't know if you're familiar with Audrey Cleo, but she's a quite handsome woman. And I think she's just dreamy. I really do. But this might be the first time that Commander Fury has actually been a little giddy.
Oh, do you want to know what I'm wearing?
Well, we'll talk about that later. But listen, man, I appreciate you being here because, and I do this all the time. I just follow all over my guests and say, thank you for taking, but really, you're a really busy guy. When the first day I talked to you on the phone, you were like dealing with some guy in like Italy or something like that. And that's crazy. I mean, I've got Italian friends, but none of them actually live in Italy. But listen, man, thank you for being here. Let's rewind a little bit. I always like to start at the beginning so we can find out a little bit about our guest. Let's rewind, go back to when you first got into games. What were some of the games that Admiral Raider was playing when he was cutting his teeth?
Oh, I started first-person shootering before God, you know, we got into the whole Pitfall and all those games and stuff, the Atari 400s and Right and Basic and stuff like that. But first-person shooters, Marathon from Bungie, actually.
Wow.
I played the hell out of that game and actually wrote scenarios and coded the physics stuff for it and edited all the physics, drew all the maps from top down and actually made the map so you can go in and play and made all the character skins, edited all the characters, did all the trips and stuff where, you know, you step on this polygon, triggers a monster kind of a thing and all that stuff. So I kind of got into all that stuff kind of early. I want to say that was early 90s or
yes,
so.
That sounds right. Sounds right.
Yeah. So that's kind of where it started gaming-wise for me. That was my first-person shooter, I would say. I think they have Marathon Durandal, which was maybe the second iteration of the Marathon series, up on Xbox Live Arcade. I just saw.
So really, man, the thing that you're famous for, you actually have been doing it since you've been gaming, literally.
The mapping stuff, yeah. I mean, really, for like over 20 years now, I guess. Holy cow. I'm old.
do you think that just comes from your natural ability to draw and want to illustrate and stuff, or did you feel like there was something missing from the game, like if we just had this?
No, well, you know, of course we all feel like that nowadays when we play, but now back then I think it was just the need to create for me always, whether it was music or artwork or whatever, just the need to create stuff, period. I really loved going in and digging into all the stuff and saying, you know, I want to shoot grenades out of this pistol, you know, or I want this rocket launcher to fire people instead of rockets, you know, things like that. So, and, you know, make my own maps. Hey, I want to be able to go over here, do this thing, kill these monsters, hit the switch, and go into this room, and then swim up under this thing and do all, you know, the ability to have that. They gave us Forge and Anvil, or the two programs. Forge, very similar to Forge in Halo now, let you actually build the maps from a top-down perspective and set all the trips and texture everything and sounds and things like that. And Anvil actually let you edit all the physics of the stuff. So like how high you could jump, you know, gravity, things like that. So yeah, it was fun. I love creating stuff. So even when I'm like, oh, I finally get a break from all the Sea Sniper stuff or the League stuff or strategy guides or whatever it is, I'm like, oh, I finally get a break. I could just lay on the couch and I get up and I start doing artwork or something for something, like t-shirts for the store or whatever.
I would like to remind everybody, before we go any further, I'd like to remind everybody that throughout the course of the conversation, I'm going to be choosing some random questions from members of the Urgent Fury community. They submitted them via Twitter and email and everything else. And as a very special gift, if I use your question on this episode, you'll get a signed Sea Snipers poster, courtesy of Raider and the Sea Snipers. Now, are we going to see any maps for Pitfall? That would be pretty awesome. I used to love that game.
I'm actually working on it, but it's one really long horizontal map.
Oh my God, that's crazy. As you got a little older, and of course the game started getting a little better, I guess you answered this question kind of. I was wondering, you know, about your first shooter title. But besides Marathon, what was the first shooter title that caught your attention? And Doom doesn't count. The real first, mine was Rainbow Six. I can't remember what platform that game actually came out of, but I remember that was the first team-based, squad-based type shooter that I ever played.
Well, I had played some Unreal Tournament, but the real squad-based stuff, clan-based gaming that I got into was a game called Pack Ops for the PC. Well, I played it on the Mac, but that actually was a mod for Unreal Tournament, but it was very similar to Counter-Strike, where, you know, you buy stuff and things like that. So, you know, it was kind of like SWAT team versus SWAT team kind of a thing, you know. So I got into that, played with the clan for a couple of years with that, and we actually did play some Raven Shield, Rainbow Six Raven Shield, in that clan as well, which is a fantastic game. Still to date, one of my favorite first-person shooters, absolutely. Had some great stuff in it where you get hit in the leg and you walk slow and you limp, you know? That stuff is brilliant, you know? So really played well, great game. And we moved on to Battlefield Vietnam. I played in 1st Digital Infantry. That's my buddy Chenzo's clan, the guy who helped create the tactical whiteboard, did all the coding for that. And we played in Battlefield Vietnam, then we did Battlefield 2, then Battlefield Special Forces, then Battlefield 2142, and then Battlefield Bad Company 2, and now we're playing, well, then we played, actually in between, before Bad Company 2, we played Call of Duty 4. Didn't play much Modern Warfare 2, because on the PC, it didn't actually have mod support, and so we couldn't have match mods for actual matches and ladders and leagues and things like that. So didn't play too much of that, and then now we're playing Call of Duty Black Ops on the PC with First Digital as well.
I'm actually calling that game COD Blops. I'm trying to
Blops, right.
I'm trying to get that started. I so far it hasn't really caught on, but let's kind of back up just a little bit. Tell us about how the Sea Snipers came to be. What came first, SOCOM or the Sea Snipers?
SOCOM spawned the Sea Snipers. I was playing in First Digital, we were playing Battlefield. I saw SOCOM coming out for the console and said, I want to run a clan. I want to start a clan and play SOCOM. I loved the whole Navy SEAL aspect. I thought the gameplay looked great. Everything looked great about it. It looked perfect. So did a lot of research, learned a lot from the clans I was in before, and, you know, took what I learned and improved on it as best I could, learned from, you know, mistakes we made there, and that really helped. You know, being a soldier in a clan first was good to, you know, progress to being a leader. So started it up, did the whole website, launched the site, started recruiting, and a couple of the first guys I brought in, Raiden and Cuervo, Raiden immediately came in and started helping me make contacts with other volunteers and whatnot. And Cuervo, actually, his first tryout for the Sea Snipers, he drove 19 hours from Florida back to New York, I think it was, straight to make his tryout.
Wow, that's pretty amazing, sir. Why do you suppose clan-based gaming has changed so much recently. It seems as though developers... It just seems like that the games aren't as clan-friendly anymore. For example, SOCOM, in my opinion, set the standard for clan support. And there's even rumors that they're going to forego the ability to create private rooms and stuff like that, opting for like a matchmaking format. Do you think players just want to get into the game now and start playing? I always felt like the whole clan thing was more or as much about socializing with your clan mates as it was gaming. Do you think it just...
I agree. And a lot of the reason for that is because of the actual infrastructure, I think, the way especially Xbox has it set up, where I don't think you can make individual rooms like that anymore on the 360. You may be able to do it on the PS3, and I know you can do it on the PC, buy your own servers. We ran one through First Digital as well, but being able to have your own server or your own room or whatever is fantastic because you get regulars, and people can actually come and form a bond. They know where to find you. And even, a lot of what we do is trying to help people, be better gamers. So, they come, say, hey, we want to, try and learn a little bit. Let's jump into the Sea Sniper's room and whatever. They know where to find us. It's not like, oh, we got to find a guy on somebody's friends list and then put it in and see if he's open and, set something up. So it's kind of a pain to do it now. And while you get to be more of a social butterfly jumping into a room and playing with random people, half the people you jump in with anymore are just raving lunatics.
I see, that's what I started to say. I think that was the other advantage, that creating your own room, I think you know what to expect. If you're going to the Sea Sniper's room, you know what you're going to get when you get there. You know how you're going to be treated.
Right.
You know how people are going to act. And to me, that is something that is, in my opinion, it's paramount for me to have a really good experience.
You also have the ability to kick people and and maintain the integrity of the room that you set for the room.
Right.
If you don't mind having drunk people in there screaming and hollering or whatever, that's fine. Leave them in there. But if you get some racist people or whatever, kids screaming and singing into the mic, you just kick them. Pow. Can't really do that stuff nowadays. And I don't know if it's just features they neglect to include anymore, or that it's just not. I don't know who does or doesn't approve that stuff, or if it's possible to do anymore, but we need some more of that stuff.
Let's get back to the game that started it all then, SOCOM. Let's talk about the game that Urgent Fury was founded on, and certainly the game that changed your life, man. When this all started, and you and I talked about this the other day, but when this all started, you must have had no idea what it eventually was going to turn into.
No idea. Absolutely no idea. In fact, I started the clan just because I wanted to do it. I wanted to try it. I wanted to compete. I have a terrible urge to compete. But, and after a month or two in, I think it was, I started, drawing the maps up just for my guys to say, hey, when we jump into these matches, here's where I want you to go. You go over here, you go do this, you shoot from here to here, here's a good sight line, whatever. And then after, two or three maps or so, I think it was, we decided to, as a clan, to just release them to the public. And so, we figured everybody could use them. Why not put them out there? And, it took off from there. Everybody was like, I want to name something on a map, or I want to put my logo on a map, and things like that. And then we made a tactical whiteboard, and everybody could draw stuff on the maps. And, it plays back like a movie and everything. So, and then we ended up going out to E3 one year, and we met up with Piggyback. And we actually did meet up with Brady back then, but this was before we'd started working with them. And the people from Piggyback called me, I guess, maybe a week or like 2 weeks after the show, and said, hey, Rich, this is the only card that I kept from the show. Do you want to do the SOCOM 3 maps for the official strategy guide? And I said, yes. And then he said, we want you to write it, too. And I said, well, I've never written anything before. And he said, well, the game, right? And I said, well, of course, yeah, inside and out. He's like, well, just write everything you know about the game. And he's like, we'll edit it and put it all together and everything for you. So I said, okay, good. How long do we have? Like 4 weeks. So they sent us a copy of the game and whatever resources they could muster. And off we went, man. Did the single-player and multiplayer maps, I think, for SOCOM 3.
What?
Did the whole write-up. And, seven strategy guides later. I mean, we've kind of got it down to a science now.
What was the first map you guys did for SOCOM? The first one you finished and said, wow, that looks pretty pretty cool.
The very first map I ever did was Frostfire for SOCOM 1.
That's the thing that gets me.
Let me stop you. Before you go any further, do not go to the website and click on SOCOM 1 and 2 maps and look at Frostfire, because it is hideous.
It's changed
that much.
It's
one of the ugliest pieces of artwork I think I've ever done. But it totally served the purpose. And there was nothing else out there. There were no overheads at all for any SOCOM maps. But you could certainly see my progression over the past 8 years, I guess it's been, and 300 maps. I'm over 300 maps now, I think.
How long typically? Well, I guess this is like a two-part question. Like, I was sitting there wondering, like, what? Hey, number one, how do you get the dimensions? Or I'm assuming maybe that's where the developers come in. They say, okay, this is 72 feet, so you must make this.
Okay, that was the biggest nightmare in the SOCOM series, basically. Until we had, I don't know if you remember the Skywalker cheat. There was a cheat you could put into SOCOM maybe 2 that would actually let you, every time you jump, you'd go higher up in the air, which was brilliant for me because I could fly up in the air and look straight down on the map, you know, and I could take a picture of it and I could do whatever I want.
This is revelatory. Are you telling me right now that you actually used the Skywalker cheat to create?
Absolutely. I absolutely did. I have no qualms about letting you know I did that for the sake of the maps. Of course, the CSS never, ever cheat, ever. No one's ever cheated here. No one ever will cheat. But yes, totally admitting to using that cheat for mapping purposes. I could have done anything I could to get a look at that map from overhead. But so what I had to do is I'd get a piece of graph paper, whatever, and I'd start in a corner and say, this the edge of this map, I had to do the edges, the border of the map first. So I would walk up and be like, okay, look, this edge goes straight up about 10 yards and over to the left maybe 15. So I start with that. Once I get something down, I can triangulate stuff from there. So I'll stand on the edge of one of the walls and I'll look north and say, okay, this building up here 30 yards up lines up with this line. So I'd make a line. You know what I mean? And then I'd go to the other wall and look east and line another building up with that and keep doing buildings and keep doing lines until I matched everything up. It was a nightmare. Absolute nightmare.
But later on in the game, I'm assuming that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming the developers came in and kind of said, hey, dude, this building is actually 37 yards from the east wall. I mean,
right. Well, we don't get any developer support until we actually work on a guide. So, you know, SOCOM 3, we were able to get overheads and things like that. So that was great. But for SOCOM 1 and 2, man, it was walking every map, and I still walk every map. You know, nowadays we get, let's say, Call of Duty, we'll get that, you know, the little mini map outline.
Uh-huh.
And I can take that, and what I do when I go out and work on a guide at a developer is I get printouts of all the overheads, and then I walk every map. Because every map's got underground overheads, doors, windows, ladders, all kinds of different places you can and can't go. And all that stuff needs to be marked out, especially interiors of buildings, which don't show up. They just show up as outlines, you know. So entrances and all that stuff have to be marked out. So I have to, you know, mark out all that stuff and then do all the second and third levels of everything and underground levels. Then I take all those maps. They take about 4 hours. Just to walk nowadays. And 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours to walk them, and then maybe about 10 hours of illustration and Photoshop and 3D programs and things like that. So they still definitely take, you know, a good solid 2-3 days worth of work, depending on our deadlines.
will they ever, I want to know this, and this includes the SOCOM 3 maps, because that's something that really frustrated me as a clan leader at the time. The only way you were getting those maps is if you, the only way you were getting those full-size maps is if you were actually buying the strategy guide. Are those available anywhere? Not that anybody's playing SOCOM 3, right? Right now, but
right, we are not allowed to put any of the maps online that we do for strategy guides, unfortunately.
Which makes sense.
We can't. We just can't. It's in the contracts that we sign and everything, so we just can't show that stuff online anywhere. So we don't even get to use them. It's terrible. But we do have, let's see, SOCOM 1, SOCOM 2, Rainbow 6 2 maps online as well for free. You know, being able to be a part of the mapping and the writing for the strategy guides is more of a benefit, I feel like, to the community. You know, for a few bucks, you go buy the guide, and you get all the maps and all the text. And, you know, while some of the text might not help some of the veteran players, it certainly helps the medium to lower-end players to get into stuff or figure out how stuff works. But you'd be surprised. I mean, when we go into work on a guide, we have to write for noobs and vets all in the same sentence, basically.
Let's move to a member question. This is a question from John Schiolino. I hope I'm saying that right. He's also known as Johnson 30. He's going to send me an angry email because I pronounced his last name. But he says, I can remember the Sea Snipers being around since SOCOM 1, 8.5 years ago. Not too many clans have made it like you guys have. How many original members do you still have? And what has been some of the most difficult moments for your clan over the years? Have you guys ever come close to disbanding? I thought that was a good question. The main question I got for, I probably got about 40 questions. Out of the 40 questions, I would say 32 of them were, how have you guys maintained the longevity? And I think, we talked about this the other day. I think it has a lot to do with your recruiting process.
It does. It does. And, all right, so let's see. No, we have never come close to disbanding ever. And what was the other part of that question? First part?
How many original members do you still have? Have you guys ever at least had some difficult family dramas?
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, we're like brothers, man. We fight. We punch each other in the face, and then we're like, ha-ha, and we go get a beer. But, you know, that happens from time to time for sure. And as far as original members, almost all of them. People just retire from the Sea Snipers. They never really quit. We've only lost two or three guys that have just either quit altogether, but only one that actually went and joined another clan. Only one. In 8.5 years.
The reason I mentioned your recruiting process is you basically said that you guys have always recruited the man, not the game. How important is that in recruiting, do you think?
It has probably been the most important thing for us because the guys I've got in the Sea Snipers, I can call. Look, I know their wives. I know their kids. I know their jobs. You know, like, everybody knows everybody here, and we really are like family. Everybody says, oh, yeah, well, brothers and family and yada, yada. But it really is like that. You know, I mean, these guys, they have bought Xboxes for each other. I mean, I can't even tell you the kind of stuff these guys do for each other. But I can call up any of these guys and say, hey, we've got a strategy guide to do next week. Can you fly out to California? And they'll go. They'll fucking go, man. And they'll go rock out and do all the work and work like 13-hour, 14-hour days for me for like a week straight and not say shit except thank you.
That's awesome.
I can call on these guys to do anything and they'll jump for it, and anybody would do it for anybody else in the clan, and that kind of a camaraderie goes so far beyond how many kills you get in a game for us. You know, we've really brought in some good tactical minds and stuff over the years, and really been able to contribute to these guys more and more every year because of the intelligence that we have, you know, just from playing so much and playing together too, you know. So it's been great. I wouldn't trade these guys for anything, man. But yes, all original members, people just retire. Like I said, only one guy has quit to go to another clan ever.
Let's talk about Chenzo. You mentioned him a second ago. Did he retire, or did he just migrate to another clan? Or
No. Chenzo and I met, back in maybe 2000. Mm-hmm. we played in a clan together, and then he formed a clan, First Digital Infantry, and I joined that, of course, and we played on the PC, and he's a PC gamer through and through, so he was only in the SS maybe for a week because I was like, why don't you come in, man, just play whenever you want, blah, 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 you know, great guy, and he tried it for a week. He's like, I hate first-person shooters on the console. He's like, I can't take it. I'm spinning around in circles and sidestepping back and forth.
That's funny. And again, as a clan leader and as a guy that I kind of pride myself on having some strategic acumen, the tactical whiteboard was like, man, that was to me. And I, at one point in my clan, that was a mandate. You must interact with the tactical whiteboard.
Oh, for us too. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was exactly like that for us as well. And, you know, tactics are still a huge part of what we do. We just do it a little differently now that that's not available. But, you know, that's one of those things, like kind of what we do with the strategy guides now. We do stuff that we want because we're just like everybody else, and then we know everybody else wants this stuff too. So we wanted to be able to draw tactics on our maps and play them back and show people, like, okay, now I'll let everybody else look at it and do it. You know what I mean? So that's kind of how all that stuff is born, you know? It's great that we have the opportunity to have, you know, the strategy guide medium to relay that information, you know?
And now, the tactical whiteboard at one time was voted must-hit site by Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to hover over Tactical Whiteboard, but any chance that we see the Tactical Whiteboard back online? I know right now it's kind of, you guys are kind of on a hiatus. I guess you've just been so busy and everything, but what's the chances we get the Tactical Whiteboard back?
There are chances.
I like your indirect answer, sir. Let's move on. After building such a fan base on the PlayStation with SOCOM, why... And a lot of people have noticed this, and a lot of people talk about it. But why the migration to the Xbox? And if it's, you know, if it's something you don't want to get into, that's fine.
Oh, no. That's a good question. And that was probably one of the biggest turning points for the SS. When we found that there was going to be such a huge gap between SOCOM Combined Assault and Confrontation, I am not making my guys play Combined Assault for another year and a half to 2 years to wait for this game. I said, we're moving. It's time to go next gen. Let's look at the consoles. Let's look at the titles that are coming out, and let's make a move. So we did our research, 3-4 months worth of research, looked at the consoles, looked at the games, looked at Xbox Live and PlayStation Network, and all the features and everything, and the price points and everything, you know, and came down on Rainbow Six Vegas and the 360. And we were like, oh shit, you know, here we go. We've got this huge community on the PlayStation, you know, everybody knows us. We've got this league that we run and everybody plays it and all this stuff. And now we're going to just jump over to the 360 where nobody knows who we are. Nobody knows about the league or anything. And a totally brand new game and community and everything. So it was all new ground for us. And I don't know, a couple months in, man, we had enough guys to start to see a league up again and get that off and running. And, you know, gosh, we've been running it since 2004, and we're in our halfway through our 19th season right now, I think.
19th season? Jeez, God.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, and, you know, I was going to save this for in a second, but go ahead and let's talk about the SEAL League. Look, there's a lot of sites out there that try to do this type of thing, and it seems like that only a couple get it right, and I'd like to think that Urgent Fury kind of gets it right, and I know I was, you know, doing research for this whole thing. I went over and checked it out. I said, you know, that's pretty cool, man. You guys seem to, I guess... SEAL was created in the Sea Sniper's image, so it seems like the SEAL League is much like your clan.
In that sense, in that respect, it is, it's not an invite-only league, but you don't just apply and get in either. We keep it really small, so the way we describe it is it's like a fight club where we beat the shit out of each other and then we go get a beer, you know? Everybody knows each other. We scrim each other all the time and practice and whatnot. You know, obviously we don't scrim the guys we're playing the next night or whatever, but no, everybody's friends here. And, you know, we started SEAL because way back in the day we were playing, it was like SOCOMClans.net or something like that was the ladder, I think it was. And there was game battles or whatever it was back then too, but we couldn't take it. We hated the formats that they played. We hated all the grenades and all the PMM mines, remember those? And all the explosives and things. And we hated it. We couldn't stand it. So we said, let's start our own league. We'll get a handful of clans that we can just play against, you know, back and forth. We'll have a little competition. We'll make it no grenades or explosives at all. In fact, it started out being called, SEAL stood for... the Sea Snipers Elite Anti-Bomb League, I think. And it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. But we made it because not only did we think we could do it better, but we just wanted something for us. You know what I mean? So we started inviting clans and whatnot. And still today, it's a great place for us to play on, you know, twice a week. We know we've got a match twice a week. We know who we're going to play. We know what map, what mode, all that stuff. So it's great. It's, like I said, it's very small. And like you said, it's very much like the SS in the sense that everybody knows each other. And you know, it's a lot of fun. Everybody has a good time. And we've had clans in here for, gosh, we've had VVV in the league for, oh God, I want to say more than 4 years.
I have another member question. This is from, this is one of our Urgent Fury Rangers, Straight Hate, a.k.a. Jeff Schwall. Since we're talking about the SEAL League, it's known that the Sea Snipers have a league called SEAL. Would they ever consider coming to Urgent Fury to compete in the UFGL or one of the TACMAP tournaments?
You know, we probably wouldn't mind doing some one-off stuff, But, you know, because of just the nature of the SEAL League, where, you know, we play twice a week, we manage everything, we update everything and run everything, it just would be no way to do it. We've got two practices and two matches a week, and we do have wives we have to tend to.
Well, I do want to say this, by the way. Straight Hate, the gentleman who sent you that question, I'm really impressed, because he really has a hard time on the computer. So the fact that he formulated and sent this email... I really hope he gets a poster, because I know it took him a lot to get that question in.
You got it.
Let's talk about Halo. When I read that, I thought that can't be right. I knew about your relationship with Activision and Call of Duty, which we'll talk about in a second. But how'd the whole Halo thing come about?
Yeah, very strange. I know it's not a title we normally would even be interested in. But Brady Games called us up and offered us the project, and you know, we thought about it. And we said, why the hell not? It's friggin' Halo Reach. It's like one of the biggest friggin' games out there ever, you know? And we can have our hands in it and be able to help players, like, not play like dicks, basically. You know what I mean?
You should have a t-shirt. That should be your t-shirt.
So, yeah, no, we jumped on it. And I'm glad we did. It was a good experience, and I think we wrote some great stuff in there for tactics and map tips and things like that, and overall, you know, actually the clan section got cut in that strategy guide because it was so enormous. There was so much information to put in it. I wrote a 12-page clan section for it, and it just totally got cut. The whole section.
Wow.
In fact, it had to be rewritten. When I first submitted it, the editor wanted it to sound more Halo-y. So I retooled it and resent it. And he said, this is perfect. This is great. It was just what we wanted, but it ended up getting cut. So sometimes that happens. It happens quite a bit. You
cutting,
know?
Cutting room floor, sir. That's,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's rough. Well, let's talk about your relationship with Activision and the Call of Duty franchise. I mean, in doing some promo stuff for this interview, somebody kind of came in, and I won't mention any names, but this person came in and kind of said, well, wait a minute, I know these guys were kind of a big deal back on SOCOM 2, but what's their relevance now? And my jaw literally dropped. I was like, tell the folks what you guys have been doing, I don't know, for the last four iterations of the Call of Duty franchise.
Yeah, you know, it was weird. The progression to Call of Duty 4, which was the first COD title we worked on, was, you know, we had done SOCOM 3 for Piggyback, and then I actually did Tomb Raider Legend. I did the maps for Tomb Raider Legend for Piggyback as well.
Oh.
And also Enemy Territory Quake Wars, but that was for Brady, and Gears of War 2. We also did, actually, when they saw, when Brady Games put together the Combined Assault Strategy Guide, or were getting ready to put it together, they had hired a guy to write the single player part of it, and that's usually how they do it. They have a single-player author and a multiplayer author, or team, in our case. So this guy, the single-player guy, went online to Amazon, I think, looked at the SOCOM 3 strategy guide, and said, who wrote this? You know, he's looking, and it just so happened that one of my guys, Shooter, had written a message or a comment or a review of the guide that said how awesome it was, and, you know, if you need anything, contact Shooter. Well, he gets an email from this guy saying, hey, do you guys want to work on write the multiplayer section of Combined Assault? And we said, well, yeah, sure. So, you know, he got me in contact with him, and then we ended up going through Brady eventually to do all the contracting and everything, and we started on that. So that led to Combined Assault Guide, which then went to Call of Duty 4, and they sent us out to, they asked us if we wanted to do it. We said, of course. And they sent us out to California, and we got dumped into a windowless room and gave us like four computers and Xboxes and everything, and said, here you go. Good luck. Yeah, they were fantastic out at Infinity Ward, I have to say. Every time we've been out there has just been an awesome experience. I mean, every day they come in, hey, what do you guys want for lunch? You know, just write your name next to this on the menu. We'll go get you lunch. And, you know, they'd come in periodically. At one point, they came in and said, hey, we got all the developers in the media room together to go over all the maps and what they were thinking when they built these maps and stuff. And we're like, what? Are you kidding me? Friggin' awesome. You know, we sit in this huge theater with like a 13-foot screen, and all the level designers are walking us through all the maps and everything. So, yeah, it was great. It's a brilliant experience. It's something we try to get everybody to go and go on these jobs and work on the projects and stuff. You know, not everybody can do it, but it's certainly something that you'll never forget. It's a lot of work. lot of work, long hours.
I'm so amazed that it led up to this, because the combined assault guide blew me away. It had everything from fire team formations, which, how did you guys put that together? I mean, was it, I know you guys have some military guys and some law enforcement guys in your clan.
Yeah, actually a lot of us are either current or ex-military, and those formations, you know, it's funny because we usually don't get a lot of time to do these guides, so, you know, there's not always time to draw tactics or things like that, or formations in that case, but we had some time to do that, and we decided, you know what, this kind of stuff will work. If you do it right, it'll work. In fact, we started doing it ourselves. You know, there's a lot of brilliant stuff that's gone into the, like, the seven guides that we've done, that if you actually apply it and your guys are good enough to do it, it works really good. So it's cool to go back into some of the old guides and look at that stuff and you know, even reapply it nowadays.
It just blows me away that a simple idea, and I guess that's what makes the world go around, are simple ideas, and you guys were in the right place at the right time. I got one final question, and then I'm going to let you tell everybody how they can find you guys on the web and all that good stuff. Now, I love Inside the Actor Studio. Are you familiar with this program?
Oh, yeah.
I love Inside the Actor Studio with James Lipton, so I'd always wanted to do Pavot's 10-question questionnaire.
Okay.
Now, I've only administered the questionnaire twice on Urgent Frequency prior to your visit, once with Audrey Cleo, of course, and then, of course, more recently with Electronic Arts' Eduardo Vasconcelos. So, Admiral Rader, are you ready for Pavot's questionnaire?
Of course. Let's go.
All right. The following 10-question questionnaire was created by French television personality Bernard Pivot. Number one, Admiral Rader, what is your favorite word?
Fuck. I would have to say it's probably fuck.
It's so versatile. I think that I think everyone would agree that it's a versatile word. What is your least favorite word?
That is a good question. That's... My least favorite word is probably no.
There you go.
I hate when people tell me no.
Yeah, I do too. Oh my gosh, I hate it. That's crazy. And I knew we would get to this, but what turns you on?
Hairy guys, like really hairy guys.
Ouch.
With, like, you know, skinny legs and arms, but a big ass beer belly. That's so fucking hot, man.
Well, I'm afraid to ask, what turns you off then?
Skinny girls.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. real women have curves. Real men have curves. What sound or noise do you love, sir?
I would have to say currently it is the riff of Rank Up.
That's awesome, man. I'm going to write that down. Can I use that riff of Rank Up?
Sure. It's all yours. I get royalties, though.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Probably the sound of a grenade dropping.
Yeah.
At my feet.
You always make that sound like...
You know you can't run away. There's nothing you can do at that point. You got to take it. It's going to happen.
I knew you would come through for me on this, man. I really knew you. And I think we've already established, what is your favorite curse word?
Yes, again, my favorite word, fuck.
For unlawful carnal knowledge. Did you know that? That's what it means.
Oh, really?
That's what it means. Yeah, see, you learned something new today. I feel pretty good about that.
Wow, I'm going to have to write that down.
For unlawful carnal knowledge. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh, flying fighter jets.
Yeah, that would be crazy, sir. I always wanted to be a sea captain, but yeah, fighter pilot would be right up there. What profession would you not like to do?
Probably... garbage man?
Fair enough.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, fair enough. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Access granted?
Oh, that's such a good one, sir.
I hope.
I am giving you the golf clap on that. Access granted. Only you would come up with that, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Of course, now tell everybody, like, where they can find you guys, where they can find SEAL, where they can buy your awesome strategy guides and all that stuff.
Oh, okay. Seasnipers.net. Everything spawns from there. The forums are seasnipers.net/forums. SEAL site is seasnipers.net/SEAL, and the store is linked from the website and all that good stuff too, but that's cafepress.com/seasnipers store, all one word, lowercase. So absolutely anybody is welcome to drop by and shoot the shit on the boards. That's what they're there for. Got plenty of members, plenty of activity, some funny threads up there too. Guys are more than welcome.
Outstanding. Listen, I can't thank you enough, man. It's been a real pleasure and real honor.
Pleasure's ours. I appreciate it.
All right. Anything you want to say to Urgent Fury before we shut this bad boy down?
Good luck to everybody, and rock the fuck out.
Indeed we will, sir. Thank you very much. Before we go, don't forget, tune in next time. You don't want to miss it. We're going to have some special intel regarding SOCOM 4. We're going to pass along to you, so you don't want to miss it. Also, don't forget to network with us via Twitter, Facebook, the official Urgent Fury blog, Urgent Fury Unleashed, and on our web channel at YouTube.com. Urgent Frequency is produced by Urgent Fury Holdings and right here in the studio by the lovely Allison Armstrong, with very special thanks to Mike Degler of Brady Games. I'm Commander Fury. It's time for me to go. Keep your feet wet and your powder dry. Hoo-yah!